Welcome to AM Best Audio.
Claims-made policies are a complex but essential part of the insurance landscape, requiring industry professionals to have a deep understanding to manage them effectively. In his book, Claims-Made Insurance, The Policy That Changed the Industry, Fisher Consulting Group President Fred Fisher unravels the intricacies of these transformative policies and provides a comprehensive guide to their evolution and key components, equipping industry professionals and inquisitive consumers with the knowledge to navigate market challenges and deliver effective solutions in the realm of professional liability insurance. I'm Lori Chortis for AM Best TV, and I'd like to welcome Fred Fisher, who joins us now to discuss his new book. Fred, welcome. It's so great to see you again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Lori, and thank you to AM Best as well for hosting me once again. They certainly are brave to have me involved.
So, Fred, can you tell us about your book and how the idea for it came about?
Well, I've spent almost 50 years in the professional liability industry, and that dates back to 1975. And I was hired by an independent claim adjusting company to investigate and handle and resolve and settle professional liability claims. And I was in law school at the time, going at night, and it was like, I didn't even know this kind of thing was going on. And number two, we were handling these claims under what was called a claims-made policy. And that was a program that was created by Equity General Agents using California Union paper. They were a subsidiary of INA. And over the years, you know, you see how these policies have evolved significantly. In the first few years of my experience, they were written on what's called, coined the phrase, the pure claims-made basis. The claim had to be first made during the policy term, so long as the insured was unaware of any fact or circumstance that could give rise to a claim. And that was about the only real limitation on the policy. And then over the years, you saw them evolve, whether it was adding what I call risk modifiers, such as a prior act date, and then a prior pending claim date. And then, you know, the claim must be reported during the policy term. And all of a sudden, you find that you could have as many as four triggers to the policy. Originally policies didn't even define the word claim. That started in the 1980s and created a lot of claim problems by 1990. And because there was no standardization, you had different definitions of claim and a number of policies. And so my first article I wrote was on that. It was limited to the claims made triggers, what triggered the policy, and dealing with, of course, the fact that you know, you had all these definitions of the word claim. And it just evolved from there. I think my next big article on it was on the problem with prior pending claim exclusions. And then another article on an overview of how the policy had evolved that was published in 2009, I think. And then there was another article that dealt with what I call the dangers that lurk in all claims-made policies, because all of a sudden they were getting really tricky and very complicated. So I did a major article on that. And that ultimately, but each article, of course, had its own focus. And so as a result, I decided, you know what? It's time to write a book that just kind of consolidates the overview. And don't get me wrong. I firmly believe in the claims-made concept. And it does save a lot of money for insurance companies because it eliminates the long tail problem that occurrence policies have. And so it also gives rise to the potential for more actuarial certainty when you close the books on a program, because theoretically, when the policy year closes, you're not supposed to have any more claims to trigger that policy. So it doesn't have the incurred but not reported actuarial problem. And so that was the reason why I decided to do the book.
Can you tell us more about how claims-made policies evolved over time and the key factors that led to their adoption in the insurance industry?
Well, the biggest problem is lack of standardization, and that still exists. You've got some policies that may even be still pure claims-made. I mean, that was true of what we call executive liability coverages, like D&O and employment practice when coupled with or packaged with director and officer liability, as well as fiduciary liability. By default, those policies were full prior act policies, and I've never understood why. I mean, if you're going to limit, have a risk modifier like a prior act date for professional liability, why aren't you doing that for director and officer liability? And for some reason, there was a split. And so as a result, somebody came up with the concept of using a prior pending exclusion, also known as a continuity date, which nobody can define what is meant by continuity of coverage, by the way. I've never seen a definition of it. But the point is, when you start using a prior pending date, that created problem number one. And that was the fact that most prior pending exclusions that say, you know, we don't cover any claim that is prior or pending to the inception date of this policy, for instance, where's the word known? What if a lawsuit is filed right before renewal and the insurer doesn't know about it? And he's not served into after policy renews, perhaps with another carrier. And he's not going to find out which carrier should be covering it. And he's probably not going to report it to the one that was in force at the time the lawsuit was filed. And so that was a problem. But this is not standardized. Some carriers are using prior act dates for D&O, and not necessarily because of poor claim history or, you know, there's an acquisition and so there's a tail issue. And as well, claims made policies even now have differing definitions of the word claim. They have different provisions for prior pending. They say that, you know, claims must be made and reported during the policy term or during an automatic extended reporting provision. And if you look at the definition of that, it says if the policy or the insurer, if the carrier or the insured does not renew or the policy is canceled, then they can have an automatic extended reporting provision that's maybe 60 or 90 days. But what if they renew? Does the right to report a policy during the policy term slam at midnight? So you're giving less rights to a loyal policyholder than you would to somebody who's moving on to another carrier for some reason? That doesn't make any sense. And all this lack of standardization means that you could have a D&O policy with claims made trigger language that says one thing, an employment practice policy on a standalone basis says something else, and an E&O policy that has something else as well. And this lack of standardization is what's, you know, making things extremely complicated for policyholders, for brokers, and for, you know, handling claims. And so that, you know, that has been a big problem. But it has been adopted by the industry for, again, the actuarial certainty in theory. It doesn't always work out that way. But in theory, it's supposed to provide actuarial certainty. So that was a good reason for it. And I still believe in that.
Customize your data experience. BestLink now offers an interactive company dashboard that provides company-level intelligence in a fast, user-friendly interface featuring interactive tables, charts, and Sparkline performance histories. Customize the dashboard tiles to prioritize the insurer ratings, data, and analytics that best support your workflow. AM Best. Our insight, your advantage.
Fred, in what ways have claims made policies transformed the professional liability insurance landscape, and what unique challenges do they address?
Oh, that's an excellent question. For one thing, pricing. If you add a claims made policy, the price is going to be cheaper than it would be if you had an occurrence policy, because occurrence policies can have a very long tail. That's not supposed to happen, but they do. And as a result, the benefit to a claims-made policy is that they became cheaper. And a good example of that is what happened in the late 1970s when you had an insurance company, I'm not going to mention names, but they wrote both. They still were writing attorney's professional liability on an occurrence basis. They were also writing on a claims-made basis. And the premium was about a 25% discount for claims-made, maybe even more in certain states that were not as litigious as, say, California might be. But that was the real benefit. And the actuarial certainty of it was equally important, because now actuaries, in theory, would have real data because the policy year is closed, or even on an annualized basis, you know, it's January 1 policy year thing, the year could be closed. And so they have more certainty as to what the ultimate experience may be, because they don't have the traditional IBNR problem that occurrence policies have. So those were very major benefits. It benefited the policyholder too, because if you're an attorney on an occurrence policy, you'd have to keep every occurrence policy you ever purchased in file in case you got sued 20 years later after a mistake was made, say like on a will or trust. Nobody's going to know you made a mistake on a will and trust until the testator dies. That could be today. It could be 20 years from now. So now, so the storage problem was resolved. Not to mention insurance companies that disappear, or maybe they got acquired, or what have you. The same kind of problem that existed that you're seeing with, you know, the Montrose decision. They're still trying to find old policies dating back to the 1930s. You know, for they are triggered by the Montrose decision for environmental exposures. That was eliminated by claims-made policies.
So, Fred, how can brokers and underwriters more effectively explain and manage the complexities of claims-made policies?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one, because they are complicated. And, you know, I don't want to plug my book, but my book was in a lot of what I call the gotchas that'll get you. And so they're there. But it's really a question of education and training. For instance, I think the state of Colorado mandates a minimum of 1 hour. You don't have to do it once, but a continuing education requirement for any employee of an insurance company that is marketing claims-made policies is required to have 1 hour of training. We can debate whether that's enough or not. But the point is, it's education and training. You really have to understand the policies, especially when you're dealing with the kind of complexities that exist in them, and the fact that no two policies are alike. Even within the same insurance company, for instance, I know very few insurance companies that have created what I would call a shell policy that deals with all the claims-made language you need, and use that same shell for D&O, employment practice, you know, et cetera, and professional liability as well. And that saves a lot of time and effort, and it's good coordination. Why would an insurance company have a definition of claim in a D&O policy that is different than the definition of the word claim in an E&O policy? That makes no sense. Because in reality, there's only one risk, and that is the probability of a claim being first made against the insured during the policy term. You could modify the hazards any way you want after that, whether it's D&O or environmental, what have you. But, and then you plug in the language for that, those specific type of hazards. But as far as triggering the policy, it's always the same. Why would you have it any differently amongst different types of policy forms? And so that also makes the training easier and simpler. More importantly, the claim departments have to communicate with the underwriting. There are still underwriters that will tell you that they believe in continuity of coverage. If you're aware of something, but you don't report it under the incident reporting provision, but claim is made after you renew with us, we would cover it. Guess what? The claim department isn't going to do that. They're going to look at it from the standpoint, and they have the law behind them, that every policy, even when renewing with the same insurer, has its own boundaries. And so it's training and knowledge and staying up to date. And it's not easy to do.
Well, Fred, speaking of claims, in your book, you highlight strategies for claims adjusters to handle claims under claims-made policies effectively. Can you elaborate on those approaches for ensuring fair and efficient resolutions?
Well, I have to look at that in two different factors. Are you a company claim person, or are you an independent? And of course, and the distinction is because if you're an independent, you're going to be representing a lot of different insurance companies with a lot of different policy forms. You got to read them and familiarize yourself with them, because a policy with company A is going to be different with a company B. And if you're internal with a company, okay, but is the same claim department that handles D&O that's going to handle the E&O claim? Because that's not always true. And maybe the policy language is different between the two. So that's a problem. Again, it goes back to education and training. What are you looking for? How far are you going to go with it? There's always that specter, for instance, that when a claim arises out of a wrongful act that took place, maybe the wrongful act took place a year or two ago, there's always that possibility that the insured may have known about it. That's number one. So really what it boils down to from a claim perspective is, what did the insured know, or when did the insured allegedly make the error? What did they know about that error? When did they know about that error? And when was the claim made? And of course, on top of it, when did they apply for coverage, and what did they say? And what's interesting about that is, and this is documented not only in an article I did in, I think, 2023, but also in the book, is the fact that when you look at the statistics and you break it down by policyholder, out of 224 appellate decisions that I looked at, because I get a daily feed on this kind of stuff from, there are really articles written by law firms, but I get this daily feed all the time. And you see claim after claim after claim being denied. I looked at 224 of them, not only for this book, but the article before it. And of that, 28% of all the coverage denials out of 224 claims that I reviewed, 28% was from law firms. And not just, you know, obscure attorneys doing, you know, tax work or something, litigating firms. And litigators have to know about coverage because, especially if they're plaintiff firms, you don't want to sue somebody that has no coverage. So they have to be sensitive to these problems. And yet, that was the highest percentage of claim denials, followed by director and officers, by the way. They're the next highest category. And probably because when a director and officer or a corporation is sued, what do? They send it to their corporate lawyer, or they have their in-house corporate lawyers look at it. And so the last thing they're looking at is, oh, do we have D&O insurance? And so those claims got denied for that reason as well. Late reporting or not disclosing. And the biggest problem with lawyers as well is the fact that, oh, if I can solve the problem, I won't be sued. Well, as soon as you think like that, like you're trying to set aside a default so you won't be sued for an E&O, that's when you have knowledge of circumstance of a potential claim. And yet they very rarely utilize or avail themselves of the incident reporting provision, also known as knowledge of a potential claim, and report that potential claim. Maybe they're not doing it because of ego. Maybe they're not doing it because they're worried about their E&O insurance will immediately go up at renewal, which is not true. I know a very prominent engineering firm that's involved in environmental engineering as well as design and building water treatment facilities. They report almost 200 potential claim incidents a year and never had an increase in premium because of it, because 99.9% of those incidents never became a claim. So the insurance company never had a posted reserve. So they're not going to raise your rates. When the industry says this is what you must do, then you should do it, but you shouldn't. And the industry is smart enough to know, don't penalize the insured for doing what they're required to do. So these are some of the things that, again, you need to know, and brokers need to be aware of this and explain it to their customers. I know very few brokers that when they send out binders, when they send out renewal letters, when they send out the policy, put in a warning about make sure that all claims and potential claims are reported. Very few do that.
How can insurers and policyholders work together to build transparency and trust in claims made policy agreements?
Well, that's a difficult question. And again, I compliment you for it. That's a difficult problem. Unfortunately, buyers are always concerned about pricing, and insurance companies are as well, too, because they want to make a profit. There has to be a meeting of the minds on that. Yes, litigation is expensive. Hiring lawyers is expensive. So, of course, the premiums have to reflect that. Policyholders need to know what their obligations are. More importantly, policyholders need to know that they must be honest in disclosing things. That's critical. Unfortunately, the trend now, there have been several law firms that have written articles where they're actually bragging about helping insurers craft language so they can narrow their policy language so that they don't have to pay as many claims they normally would pay. I really have a problem with that. Insurance is about financial protection, putting the insured back into the position they were in before the loss. When you're trying to intentionally write policies that are going to narrow the scope of that kind of coverage, I think that's just plain wrong. That is not what insurance is all about. Fortunately, there are still insurance companies out there that are willing to be fair and reasonable. And that's what you have to look for. You have to look for appropriate language. And the brokers need to be doing that on behalf of their clients as well. That gets into a whole other area of the duty of insurance producers. 37 states hold them to an order taker standard of care, which means that your broker, no matter who he's working for, if they don't hold themselves out as experts, they have no more obligation to you than your server at Denny's. That's just plain wrong. This is actually an opportunity for brokers. If you're willing to give the advice and work with your insured and educate them as to what is necessary, number one, you're not going to get sued. And number two, you've done your diligence, and all you have to do is document it. Your client may not listen to you. They say, no, I still want the cheapest policy. Fine. Document your recommendations and the choices that they made. It's going to make a lawsuit much harder to maintain. But right now, everybody's being told, oh, we can't be held liable, you know, for not giving any advice. Well, fine. You're still going to get sued. And 80% of all claims settle anyways. So what have you accomplished by that? Except help lawyers build bigger homes. There has to be a mutual mind. I believe in the insurance industry. I believe in insurance companies making profits. I also believe that they do that by providing a product that provides the financial protection a policyholder should have. And if the policyholder has the right broker to explain these things to him, or they have a good internal risk management department, they can then make a knowledgeable decision. Do they want to save money, or do they want to have financial security and financial protection? That's the choice that needs to be made. And that's how they do it.
And Fred, what do you hope readers will take away from your book?
Well, number one, they're going to get well-educated. Hopefully, they'll find it entertaining. I did my best to write this book, not for the industry. I wrote it for the consumer. And I tried to put everything in perspective as to what's going on in the world today, to some extent, and they can relate to it. And it's done in such a way that it's not technical, that they can really understand, hey, if I learn about this and understand what I'm supposed to do, the insurance company is going to be there when I need it. Because frankly, I don't think there's anything more intangible than insurance, other than perhaps Bitcoin. But the bottom line is, you don't know whether you purchased a good policy until you submit a claim. And guess what? That's not when you want a surprise. So from that perspective, they're going to learn in detail, in language they can understand, everything that we've gone over today and more. And I think that's the value there. I really believe that. When you think about the 450,000 law firms that are out there buying claims-made policies, the millions of businesses, whether they're corporations or LLCs or partnerships, that are buying, you know, policies that are on claims-made basis, and that could be as many as 6 or 7 different policies, by the way, each one with a different definition of claim, for instance. I think the risk management departments and the risk managers and the consumers in general are going to have a better understanding of what they need to know. And that's what this book was for. Not just consumers, of course, but the professionals itself. More and more, they're just being told, get out there and sell some insurance. Well, you know what? If you understand what you're selling, understand the buyer, you are going to take business away from the big boys that are unwilling to do that, because they're not willing to do it. If you do, you're going to succeed.
Fred, this has been so interesting, so informative, and I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Lori. And thank you again. It's been a pleasure. And I'm honored that, you know, AM Best is sponsoring this as well. And I want to thank AM Best as well. I've had a long history with your organization, dating back to 1975, frankly, I've known the name. So thank you all again. Thank you, Lori.
That was Fred Fisher, president of Fisher Consulting Group, and author of the book, Claims Made Insurance, the policy that changed the industry. For AM Best TV, I'm Lori Chortis.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.